The Midnight Myth Podcast presents The Wheel of Ka, an exploration into the writings of Stephen King. What started as two friends rereading The Dark Tower has turned into an exploration of Stephen King's writing writ large. This episode, we talk 11-22-63.
Something wrong. Something bad. Certain empty houses that seem to stare like the faces of people suffering from terrible mental illness. An empty barn on the outskirts of town, the hayloft door swinging slowly open and closed on rusty hinges, first disclosing darkness, then hiding it, then disclosing it again. A splintered fence on Kossuth Street, just a block away from the house where Mrs. Dunning and her children lived. To me, that fence looked as if something, or someone, had been hurled through it and into the barrens below. An empty playground with the roundy round slowly spinning, even though there were no kids to push it and no appreciable wind to turn it. It screamed on its hidden bearings as it moved. One day I saw a rough carved Jesus go floating down the canal and into the tunnel that ran beneath Canal Street. It was 3 feet long, the teeth peeped from the lips parted in a snarling grin. A crown of thorns, jauntily askew, circled the forehead. Bloody tears had been painted below the thing's weird white eyes. It looked like a juju fetish. On that so-called kissing bridge in Bassey Park, amid the declarations of school spirit and undying love, someone had carved the words, "I will kill my mother soon." And below it, someone had added, "Not soon enough. She's full of disease." One afternoon while walking on the east side of the barrens, I heard a terrible squealing and I looked up to see the silhouette of a thin man standing on the GS and WM railroad trestle not far away. A stick rose and fell in his hand. He was beating something. The squealing stopped and I thought, it was a dog. And he's finished with it. He took it out there on a rope leash and he beat it until it was dead. There was no way I could have known such a thing, of course. And yet I did. I was sure then, and I am now. Something wrong. Something bad.
Fellow travelers on the path of the beam, Wheel of Ka is back. We are in studio, recording our first of probably several episodes on 11-22-63.
Yes.
Really excited to be here. It feels like just yesterday we were sitting down and doing our episode of The Shining, and yet it also feels like that was 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, well, it's funny. You know, when we first started, we were on a pretty good clip because we lived next to each other. You know, and now we have families, we have kids, schedules are different. You know, the books are getting bigger.
Eagles are losing Super Bowls.
God.
You know, we were probably going to record this a week ago before the Super Bowl, and that was just not possible. I think my headspace was all wrapped up in the Eagles and the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Who lost, and we all have to live with that shame and defeat for the rest of our lives.
And forever.
It's like a black mark is over us that will haunt us. Like some sort of a supernatural force that lives in a sewer in a town.
Oh, wow.
That's what it's like.
It does feel that way.
That's how I feel with the Super Bowl loss.
You know what, though? I'm past most of the anger stage, and I'm past the sad stage. I'll be honest, Monday and Tuesday were rough. Rough. I woke up, and I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this day, you know? It was tough.
I didn't want to do it. I still kind of don't want to do it. I'm past the anger and the sadness. I'm moving towards acceptance. However, this is not about the Super Bowl, but I brought it up, so here we are. If I start to talk about the Super Bowl, the anger phase comes back really big.
Yeah, that's why I say I'm not completely over it, because if somebody talks to me about it, I start to get angry again.
Anyway, those are our thoughts on the Super Bowl and why we're a week behind when we would have done it. Let me break it down for you, fellow travelers on the path of the beam. We're doing a bit of a different approach to this book. One of the reasons we're changing the approach is that the book is so big that we wanted to kind of chop it up. We wanted to do that with The Stand, and we ended up doing, I think, two episodes on The Stand. Mm-hmm. And we felt like we shortchanged some things that we could have really talked about. So we're going to break up 11/22/63 into chunks. This is our first episode. We've read up to part four, keep me honest. Is that right? Yes. So we've read parts 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then we have stopped, and we're going to talk about those. Unlike some of the other books that we've read that we have either read before, or at the very least we knew a lot about because they have such a huge pop, you know, cultural zeitgeist, The Stand I kind of understood the gist of. Mm-hmm. Everybody's heard of Pennywise the Clown,
right,
and the town of Derry, and that Pennywise goes around eating kids. So I had some idea. With 11/22/63, I had absolutely no idea what this book was about.
Yep.
And into part four, I have no idea where the book is going. So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of summarize where the book is at, what we've read so far. As always, we're going to talk about where we think this book links to Stephen King's The Dark Tower, how it links. We'll do references to The Dark Tower. And then we're going to talk about our impressions of it and where we think it's going. I mean, I think that sounds like the game plan, right?
And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think part of the reason why we decided to break it up this way is because from the first five pages, it's very clear how connected this is to The Dark Tower.
Yes.
So I think, you know, this is the first book in a while, really since It, I think, that directly connects to the tower in a way that we're able to kind of extrapolate a little bit more than the other books.
I would agree. I feel like the energy of the rose and the tower and the man in black are all over this book.
Oh, yeah.
In a very intentional way. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the reasons I think that might be the case is, one, Stephen King is writing this book well after he's completed The Dark Tower.
Yep.
And I think it's probably on his mind. I don't know. But putting the cart before the horse again. Steve, how you feeling, dude?
Oh, I feel good. I feel very good. You know, I just, raising a child is intense, especially a 13-month-old. We're almost walking, which is pretty cool. But no, I feel pretty good. I wanted to make it an intention this year. Not really a resolution, but an intention to do more artistically again, you know, and for us to get, you know, to reading more and back into this, you know, into this cycle, because it's good for my mental health, you know, to be completely honest. And so getting back into it and talking about it and using my brain for adult things and not just baby things is refreshing.
Mm-hmm. So I hear you. I like that. The intention rather than the resolution.
Yeah.
I had three New Year's intentions. One, take better care of my teeth. Two, exercise more. Three, podcast more.
Yeah.
Those are my intentions. Nice. That's what I wanted to do in this year.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just switching it from a resolution to an intention to like, I actively want to look at it this way. I think it's a little easier to manage expectations then like, oh, I'm a resolution. This is a big thing. It's like, it actually doesn't have to be big. It can be, it should be, to me, manageable.
I completely agree with that.
You know,
I'm going to borrow that. That's the first time I've ever heard that.
That's fine.
I'm definitely going to use, this is my intention for this year. I kind of think the New Year's resolution is kind of BS to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you're setting a goal for yourself that's like super big. And it's unachievable. And instead of taking little bites at a time, you know, because then, and it's almost a joke. Oh, we have our New Year's resolutions. And I heard something the other day. It's like in February, if you're still sticking to those resolutions, it's like, why do we make them then?
Exactly. And I'm like, I don't floss my teeth enough.
Yeah.
I want to floss more.
So you get up and you're like, I should floss.
I'm going to floss every day. Hey, that's what achievable. I want to do. I can floss my teeth and I can go to the gym more. I can do that. I can make it manageable.
Yeah. And it's like, if there's a reason to stick to it, because it's intentional. I'm doing this for a purpose as opposed to just, I got to make a New Year's resolution.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons we wanted to break this up too is so we could do more podcasts and not wait multiple months sometimes, because a lot of these books are huge and we only have so much time in the day to read. So we figured if we break it up more, we could talk about it more. Yeah.
And I didn't actually realize how big this book was.
It's huge.
Because I switched to a Kindle. I got a Kindle for the holidays, and I love it. I love it. It's crazy. I thought I would hate not having the physical book, but I didn't realize how big it was because I didn't have it. And then I saw your copy like a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I have the physical book.
Giant.
Yeah, I might have to get one of those. You have the Kindle. It looks and feels like a little mini book, right?
Yeah, just a tiny. It's great. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I might have to get one of those.
They're good.
Anyway, let's talk a little bit about this book, what's kind of happened, where we're at. It features a English teacher in New England who his friend runs a diner and finds out that the diner, when you go into the back, you can walk down the stairs and you enter into the year 1958. And in the year 1958, you are, whatever you do or don't do, no matter how long you stay in 1958, when you go back to the portal to the present, only 2 minutes have passed. So you can spend years in 1958, leave the portal, only 2 minutes are passed. And the friend who owns the diner, his name is Al, has terminal lung cancer and spent years in the past trying to undo the JFK assassination. He feels that if he can stop JFK from being assassinated, he can make a fundamental change where the world is better. However, as a heavy smoker, he develops lung cancer and is going to die. And so he asks his friend Jake to take this up, who takes on the pseudonym George in the past. George first goes into the past to try to stop a murder from happening, thinking, if I can stop this murder from happening, come back into the present, I can prove that when we go into the past, there can be a major fundamental change that will hold. He is successful in almost stopping the murder. The murder is of an entire family, except for one little boy, by the estranged husband/father. He's able to save most of them, but one boy dies. And then he goes back again after doing this, stops the murder, and then heads to Dallas, where he is going to try to, and mind you, the town that he goes to stop the murder is Derry, mm-hmm. in Derry, Maine, mm-hmm. the site of it, and also Insomnia. So he goes to Dallas. Dallas is a really awful place. He witnesses a murder-suicide in his first day there. And then after that, he goes to the town Jody, where he becomes a teacher. Mm. He starts settling into his life there, essentially killing time and studying the notes of that his friend did about where Oswald will be so he can try to stop him. While he's doing that, he starts writing a book, as well as he starts writing his memoir, which is the book 1120-63 that we're reading now. Yeah, that's where we stopped. That's what we have read up to.
God, your brain has an impeccable way of remembering these details.
It's all in the zone.
It's so funny.
I get in the zone and I start recall. And
the only reason I'm saying this, just to take a slight detour, is because right before we hit record, Derek was like, you know, it's been like 3 weeks and some of it is probably faded. And I was like, oh yeah, definitely for me. Of course it has. And you just recounted the entire thing. But so impressive as always. I'm always impressed by that.
Thank you. Yes. I have a talent. It's recapping things.
You know, I was very excited when, you know, we're first reading this book and it really does echo the tower right away. You know, I think one of the things I was longing for in the last few books that we read was more of the tower. Because the truth is, for me, I became a Stephen King fan through The Dark Tower first, right? I had never really read... I had read The Green Mile way back when, but I couldn't say I was a Stephen King fan. So it you know, to come back and for this book to be so heavily featured, things like there's obviously a door that we're walking through. You know, we're going to talk about, you know, time splitting off and changes and it was just so refreshing to kind of come back to this weird world and again to also come back to Derry. For him to learn, you know, are we gonna talk about him as Jake or talk about him as George?
In my notes, he's Jake George.
Okay.
And that's a really good question that I think we can
talk about. I guess when he's not in the past, we'll call him Jake. But when he goes into the past, we call him George, I guess.
It's an interesting thing because this character's literally bifurcated and has become George, in though he is also Jake. And it's something that we kind of see in The Tower too.
Yeah.
When in the drawing of the three, when Roland ends up preventing the character Jake, another Tower reference, we have a Jake in the Dark Tower. Yep. We have a Jake here. Jake in the Dark Tower goes to his English class. We have Jake in this as an English teacher. Mm-hmm. There's all of these little Easter eggs and things that connect to the Dark Tower. And when we have Jake in the Dark Tower not get murdered by Jack Mort, Roland's personality splits into two different things that have and have not happened. He did kill Jake in the mountains. He did not kill Jake under the mountains. And we get sort of these two selves. Mm-hmm. And this happens to Jake as well. This is in the book, The Wastelands, who remembers being killed by Roland and let fall, but also that didn't happen. And in a weird way, we have these two characters. Mm-hmm. We have Jake and we have George that are both living simultaneously, yet in two different times. Mm-hmm. And if he goes through this one portal, he instantly becomes Jake. And he goes through the other, he instantly becomes George. And a question that I think we should have about this book, mm-hmm. when it comes to an individual's identity, is what makes you you? Mm. How do you become you? If you are stripped out of your time, out of your profession, mm-hmm. out of your identity, are you a different person?
Yeah.
There are things that are similar. George and Jake both like to write. They both like to read. Mm-hmm. They're both better teachers than they are writers.
Right.
They're both heterosexual. Mm-hmm. They're both incredibly charming and charismatic when they want to be. And they can kill when they have to kill. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, George is the killer. Jake is not.
Yeah.
You know, so there are some things that are similar. There are things that are different. And like, who is this character? At this point, does this character even know? I mean, we leave off with him falling in love with another student in Jody.
Yeah.
He's forming complex adult relationships under this pseudonym, under this different name. Mm-hmm. Another Tower reference. What does Roland do when he is young, when he goes to Hanbury? What does he do? He takes on a different name.
Right.
And becomes a different person,
right.
And becomes Will Dearborn. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know. Is he Jake? Is he George?
I think, well, right. And that's why I have that question. I mean, we spend more time with him at this point as George. And there's got to be some consequence where he spends so much time in the past. How do you distance yourself from that? You know, how can the human brain actually do that? That's another thing. Can the psyche do that? Will that be his downfall? I mean, who knows? I think it's interesting that he chooses to do this in the first place at all. You know, like this is for whatever reason. I mean, he doesn't have anything to lose. That's one thing about Jake, is that Jake and George, they really don't have anything to lose, right? He's divorced from an alcoholic wife, which is an interesting switch. You know, yeah, I would have
usually it's the man who's the alcoholic.
I mean, I would have thought that Jake George would have had so many more problems by now than he does. He actually seems like a relatively, you know, middle of the road guy until he has to kill somebody to change time. So that's also interesting.
It really is. And you know, he gets inducted into this insane adventure to change the past and accepts that. And decides that he's going to do that. And you think it's because he, as Jake, he does not have, other than his teaching job, he does not have much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think not that he doesn't have much, he just doesn't have anything really to lose. There's no family, there's no child, right? We don't hear any talk of parents or brothers or sisters or friends. You know, we just hear about, like, he does his job, he's very good at it. You know, he's friends with Al. He hangs out. He you know, goes to the same burger joint. He gets the same order. You know what I mean? He's a relatively simple guy. And I think there's something about like, oh, can I change the past? I'm sure there's some sort of poetic beauty and some poetic justice in being like a writer who's writing his own memoir. The greatest thing he's ever going to write is this memoir about how he tries to stop JFK from getting killed. How you don't get lost in your own story, though. See, this is my one question. We have such a, he seems like such a pure and genuine person. I'm like, where is he fucked up? When's the other shoe going to drop, you know?
I'm going to say we're, you know, a quarter of the way into the book. And this character has committed two deaths. He's killed the same guy twice. Which is, the metaphysics in this is messy.
It is messy.
Because he goes into the past. And he stops Mr. Dunning, I forget Mr. Dunning's first name, from killing his wife and all of his children, except for the one child who grows up to be the janitor.
Right.
And that moves him to try to stop, to prevent this, isn't able to fully prevent it, then comes back a second time, realizing what he has to do, and then just waits till this guy is out in the middle of nowhere and shoots him in the face, and then walks away very coldly.
Yeah.
And I think, so he's killed the same guy twice. He's committed one killing. I don't know how many times he's killed someone or not.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean,
that being stated, if he had a really terrible flaw, King usually is going to hit you over the head with that early and often.
And that's kind of my point. I mean, maybe the flaw is he's just too willing to go on this quest. I don't know. There's no glaring error.
The one flaw that King points to immediately at the very beginning is that he struggles to show genuine emotion to other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the very first thing we learn about him. Well, he's not a crier.
And that's probably why he can kill.
So there's a part of him that is...
So maybe...
Got some ice in his veins.
So maybe he's a serial killer. I don't know. This is the thing.
He's definitely not a serial killer.
No, but he's got like some of the qualities.
No, I don't agree with that.
No emotion? I mean, he's not going to become one, but...
I don't know. The way that I am reading this so far, and this could be totally off, I may come to eat my own words.
Yeah, but this is why doing this early like this is fun.
It seems like to me what I'm reading, and again, King has Jake George tell another boy to not analyze a story in the same way that Stuttering Bill does in It. When Stuttering Bill is in college and they're all analyzing the story, he says, hey, can a story just be a story? And Jake George says that almost exact line to a kid on his way to an English class in his first trip back to the past about a story. I forget which one it was, that it's just a story. So I could be, King is constantly telling us, don't overthink this stuff. Certainly don't devote your lives to creating podcasts about this stuff because it's not that deep.
Wasn't it Catcher in the Rye?
It wasn't Catcher in the Rye. Maybe it was Catcher in the Rye. I don't know. I don't remember which it was. I don't feel like it was because Catcher in the Rye is clearly about things.
Right, right.
And I don't think I had read the story. Anyway, what I'm saying is I think what I'm reading so far is that place shapes character. There are these certain places where people can be, and that would include time. So time and place have an impact on who you are and what you can and cannot do. And the evil, the bad places are Derry and Dallas.
Yeah.
These are the places that are where the bad just oozes up from out of the ground, where there is some sort of primordial ancient evil. Now, maybe I'm biased because I know that's exactly how it works.
Right.
And there is a literal primordial evil living in the sewers of Derry. But King draws our attention to that and how George perceives that from the moment he walks into Derry.
Yeah, right away.
A lot of ink is that this place is wrong. There's people are bad here. He did find a few good people, but... then mostly he talks to Bevy and Richie, mm-hmm. and it's those kids that he feels a connection to. And but it's the place that produces the bad to me.
Yeah.
It's these bad places that are like magnets to bad people that take whatever the worst part of you, whatever your worst impulses are, and magnifies them. Mm-hmm. And it's very different when he goes to Jody in Texas.
Yeah.
And that place is a place that doesn't have this dark shadow. Now, will we find out if there's a primordial evil living in Dallas? I don't know.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past it based on the events that had happened.
I kind of feel like we might have.
And reading it, Dallas was awful.
Yes.
Awful.
The one of the worst scenes is that murder-suicide that he witnesses in Dallas.
Immediately. Almost immediately.
It's absolutely brutal.
And I'll tell you, I mean, we've talked in the past about places being, you know, the source of evil. You know, we talked a lot about it in our episodes in It, about how Derry was like that. We've talked about how Fetic is like that. We've talked about different parts of Midworld that remind us, you know, different places, you know, like when we see the Tahin in, what's the pig? What's it called? What's the bar?
The Dixie Pig.
The Dixie Pig. You know, we see that scene and how a place for Stephen King really can manifest evil, and it, as opposed to the people themselves being evil, which I've always thought was interesting. You know, that the land itself takes control of these folks, and it's happening all over, and George is seeing it all over. You know, and then you get to a place like Jody, and maybe it's the cynic in me, I don't know, but I'm like, oh man, something bad's going to happen in Jody. It's just so great. Jody is such a good place. It's simple. It's the people are kind. He's able to find like true friendship in a place where he fits as a teacher and as a person. The entire theater scene, look, as a theater kid, to as a big man, like a you know, I don't want to say a fat guy to put myself down, but to be a bigger guy and a person who grew up playing sports, to watch and read that whole section of that theater piece with that student, him coming out and just, it was electrifying. Jody is electrifying because of its simplicity. And I think if we didn't have moments like that in this book, I think it would be a little unbearable. If you ask me, not in a bad way, not that the book would be bad, but it's just like a breath of fresh air amidst all of this evil.
Which is why I don't think that we should expect something cynical to happen in Jody.
I want it to just be good.
I feel like there is this contrast exists for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason is that certain places that have this darkness to them, couple that with humans who are susceptible to temptation and selfishness and cruelty, you end up then getting these monsters working through people to do these horrible things to each other.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's not at Jody really kind of highlights that there is this sort of duality, in that Jody is not a place. It's not free of suffering and pain.
No.
The character Mimi, introduce a character in a chapter and then have that in the end of that chapter mean know that character and feel like that character is living rent-free inside my head.
Yep.
And then having her die of cancer was just like so guttural.
Yep.
And that character felt so amazing and so unique and so unlike a character I've read from a King story before. And then of course she's going to have cancer and then die. And it's all, I think it's one chapter.
She's
a very long chapter.
Yeah, it's like 50 pages. And she starts off, you get this impression that we're going to have a problem. Maybe this is the problem with Jody, is Ms. Mimi. And then you come to find out that actually she's the heart of this entire town and cares so deeply for the people and the place. And maybe that's another comment. You know, maybe we're the places of evil. It's that the people who live there and occupy that space just don't care enough to rise up against that evil. And Derry feels like that. It takes a group of seven kids, you know, to dispel this evil magical force dressed as a killer child-eating clown.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's in, there is this interesting comment that in this little town of Jody that there is enough light to dispel evil from 40 miles away where Dallas is. It's not that far of a distance. But Jody is not touched by Dallas's evil.
Yeah, it's completely free of that. I will give you one quote about Mimi and our character Jake George that I pulled out, if you don't mind.
Of course.
This is after he learns of Mimi's death. There are more clothes than ones you put on your body. Every teacher knows that. And food isn't just what you put in your mouth. Miss Mimi had fed and clothed many, including me. I sat there on a bench I bought at a Fort Worth flea market with my head lowered in my face and my hands. I thought about her, and I was very sad, but my eyes remained dry. I've never been what you call a crying man. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's a good way to tell us about this character who can be very stoic mm-hmm. and doesn't outwardly always express his emotions, still with the immense feeling for this character. And I love the idea that a teacher knows there is more than one way to clothe and feed someone. Mm-hmm. You can clothe and feed someone by caring for them, by giving them acceptance, by welcoming them into your community, seeing them as an equal. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really beautiful way to kind of sum up where this character is at.
Yeah.
And what this character, Mimi, who had such a short stint in this book relative to its size, meant.
Yeah. Oh, she had a huge impact.
So a few more tower things
yeah.
I want to point out.
Yeah.
Some of them small. Some of them might be coincidental.
They're everywhere, though.
So one, when Jake George is in the past, he goes and he meets a character called Andrew Cullum in yep. New England.
Yep.
Is that someone related to John Cullum, who's from Song of Susanna and the Dark Tower?
Sure.
I tried to find online if anyone definitively knew, is this the same? No one knows, but the Cullums come up in New England all the time.
A lot.
So there's obviously a reference there.
They're an old family.
They're playing a game called cribbage, and there's a type that's called Mystic 19. Like, okay, come on.
All right.
Mystic 19. All right.
Seriously.
There's definitely Mystic 19.
Yeah.
In the theater scene, one of the last lines in that chapter is how Jake George is reflecting on where Oswald is and that he had been married for 19 days.
Yep. Oh, 19 days.
19
right,
days
right, right.
at that point. So right. the number 19 is popping up quite times. A bit. Mm-hmm. In the Dark Tower, you mentioned Fedick and the Dixie Pig. Mm-hmm. So when Jake and Susanna, you know, submerge into the tunnels underneath the Dixie Pig mm-hmm. and they have all of these different doorways, there is a doorway to Dallas, Texas in 11/22/63.
All right.
A direct doorway to where I assume the climax of this book is going to take place.
Yeah, and it was before this was written, so clearly he had his mind on this, for sure.
Absolutely. And JFK is mentioned many times, in particular in Susanna, before she's Susanna, yeah. as Odetta Holmes, reflects on JFK as the last American gunslinger.
Right,
yeah. And that when he dies, the era of the gunslinger is over, mm-hmm. almost like, has America moved on
yeah.
since the death of JFK?
Well, and the other question that I have, and you and I had briefly talked about this one day while we were in the middle of reading this, is like, you know, we talk a lot about Keystone Earth. And is the reality, like the 2011 that this book starts in, and theoretically the 1958 of our world, are we on Keystone Earth or not?
I don't know, because I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I don't think we are either.
Let me say this. The world where Jake George has this doorway portal to the past mm-hmm. is not Keystone Earth in the Dark Tower.
Okay.
And the reason I think that, and I could be proven wrong, mm-hmm. is that time moves in one direction in Keystone Earth.
Yeah.
They say that over and over again and again.
Yeah.
In the Dark Tower. Now, what Earth is the Keystone Earth?
Yeah, this is the interesting question.
Is harder to say.
Yeah.
Because clearly, this is also the same Earth where Pennywise the Clown is in.
Yes.
which is not the same Earth where the stand is in.
Right.
But is the same Earth where insomnia happens, which is also, I think, the same Earth where The Shining and Dr. Sleep happen.
Yes.
But if it's not the Keystone Earth, like, I feel like there is a center Earth in all of his stories, but for them to be the Keystone, or which you would think that has to be the Keystone, almost every story takes place in this same universe.
Yeah.
Except time doesn't seem
to move,
to go one way.
Yeah.
Unless when Jake goes into the past and changes something, he is not actually changing something. Mm-hmm. So let me give you the theory, and I'm going to delve into novice, stupid man level ideas of time travel.
Okay.
This is not backed by any hard science.
Disclaimer.
I did an episode in the Midnight Myth, which follow us on Midnight Myth on all the social medias, midnightmyth.com. We did an episode on the Midnight Myth on Into the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. And in that, to prep for that, I interviewed a friend of mine who's a physicist. And I asked about the physics of the movie Into the Spider-Verse. And essentially, it goes a little, if you want to hear more about that, listen to that episode on the Midnight Myth feed. That's where we dive deep into it. But essentially, really small subatomic particles don't seem to behave by the normal laws of physics. As soon as you observe a subatomic particle, it fundamentally changes. And so based upon that discovery, scientists have been trying to rectify and unify the movement of subatomic particles and larger bodies because Newtonian laws don't seem to apply. So there's a hole there. The theory that fills that up, completely unproven, is the theory of the multiverse, which is very relevant to contemporary storytelling, including the Stephen King, who I would say is kind of the OG multiverse. He did it before it was cool.
He definitely did it before it was cool.
It's now cool. Every story is a multiverse story. Well, where those come from is the discovery of seeing subatomic particles. And the idea is everything that we do or don't do creates a splinter reality where it did and did not happen. Mm-hmm. So if I, while doing the podcast, I pick up the mouse right now and I put it down, that's happened in this reality. But there's also a reality where I pick up the mouse and instead of putting it down, I dropped it or it blew up. Mm-hmm. And in every potential possible variation, there's a reality where that happened. Now, whether that's true or not, I have no idea. Again, I'm not an expert on subatomic physics and the nature of the multiverse or not. But what if this is Keystone Earth? Jake goes back into the past and it's like observing the subatomic particle. It doesn't actually change what happened. It just creates another Earth where this did or did not happen. Mm-hmm. And what if this is what causes all of the universes that exist? In all the where's and when's, and including Midworld.
Well, because we get this, you know, example when he goes back to Al's, where one of the pictures is different. One of the framed photos that before he went, there are these tiny little splinters and these tiny little changes in reality that seem tiny here, but like you said, could have created an entire universe of things that have happened, chain reactions. And I don't know, that blows my mind. It really does. I mean, that's difficult to think about.
What if there's a time where Jake or Al went back, created a chain of events that created a super society called America that blows itself up in a nuclear war? They become the great old ones and it forms the post-apocalyptic world that becomes Midworld.
Yeah.
You know, like, what if all of the realities are being created by the fact that these two New Englanders are tinkering with time? And this is how the multiverse happens in Stephen King's world.
Oh, wow.
This is where the multiverse comes from.
Which is why he's able to explain it way later in his career, in terms of being a writer, that he was doing it the whole time. But that this is the one, this could be the book that started.
That starts the multiverse. All of it. Because there aren't very many Stephen King books that take place before then, but they can all be reconciled, I think, in one timeline before 1958. Mm-hmm. It's before the events of The Stand.
Yeah.
So that could be another splinter reality that is created, and time can get funny, and this is the thing that could be putting stress on the tower and breaking all the beams.
There it is. It happened again. I mean, yeah, that would make sense.
I have no idea if the rest of the book will bear this theory out. This could be total. You might have read the book, listener, and been like, Derek, you are so wrong.
I don't know, though. I mean, I don't think that he would hoodwink us. You know what I mean? I just don't think that that's something that he would do to build up the importance of going back into the different when and where and the splinter effect of it. I mean, Al does talk about it. You know, he knows that there's a danger to it as well. And I just don't see King being like, ha, 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 that was just a trick.
And then there's yellow card man is an important piece of evidence.
Turns into orange card man who ends up black card man.
And he's like, he seems to know, well, things are changing.
Yeah.
You're creating these different realities and not necessarily changing one timeline, but creating a whole other universe every time that you're doing this.
Yeah, because it's, you know, the idea that it's just so simple where they just walk, you know, down the steps and into 1958 and change the past and walk back. You know, that seems a little too good to be true without some sort of splinter effect.
Right. And it's not a thinny, because a thinny would kill him.
Yep.
We know what those are from Wizard and Glass, these places where the border is thin and they are seductive and they are dark and things can come out of the thinny. But if you go into the thinny, it electrocutes you.
There's also nothing auditory. You know, with a thinny, typically there's chimes or a sound or a song, something auditory. So there's nothing there in that example as well.
It's not exactly a door because you walk down the stairs. It's a stairwell.
Right.
As opposed to a door.
Well, one of the things that I had thought about is like, is this the same, you know, type of thing when the Manny folk are protecting the door on that mountain? In the Dark Tower, you know, is this the same? Is this the door they're protecting? You know, is this who knows? You know, is this the one? Is this the door that holds up the entire universe? It could be.
It could be. It could be like the rose.
Yeah.
That it is. It is. Who knows? But there is a weird thing happening here with time, and I don't necessarily like the. You know, you had mentioned this. This is the first book where it feels like Kai is very active.
Oh, heavily.
In that the past, it doesn't want to change.
No, not at all. And I get the danger. You know, it didn't feel right from the very beginning. It didn't. Al's got all this money. You know, George is set up. You know, there's no worries there. He's just going to go back and the milkshakes taste different and the Coca-Cola's sweeter. And there's just something that feels like, you know, this time is really not to be messed with. And in our reality, it does move one way. And to go back and change that, you're going to have to sacrifice something in your reality to change such a big moment like, you know, the murder of JFK.
Which truly is a watershed moment in American history. Mm-hmm. It really is one of those pivotal things where afterwards, everything was different.
Yeah.
Very much like 9/11 was.
Yep.
Also like the COVID-19 pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's like things have fundamentally, after this one event, completely changed. People will not be the same.
I mean, people watch the President of the United States' brains blow out on live television. You know, my dad talks about remembering watching it as a young child. And I mean, that's terrifying. That's going to change you no matter who you are.
I 100% agree. And even though we weren't alive in that, everyone I know that lived through that, every time it's brought up, it's just like, oh yeah, they remember every little detail.
Everything.
About that. Like, I remember every little detail when the towers fell in 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, there are these huge watershed moments where things fundamentally change. And the question is, if you had the power to undo it, would you?
Mm-hmm.
And I do, one thing that I think is the flaw of Jake George, in my opinion, and I think it links with his cool, cold emotions. He is definitely tinkering with things way bigger than him.
Oh, way bigger.
And there will be forces that are going to try to stop this.
And is that, you know, the romanticism of an English major, of an English teacher or a writer? Is that part of it, thinking that if I could change this grand story with just one stroke of my hand, what could that do? I mean, look, is it, thinking about it, me, if I were to think about that, if I had the opportunity to change something for the better, I mean, I don't know, would I take it? There has to be a consequence, though. Major consequences.
Nothing in the universe is free.
No.
And I also think, you know, you talk about, is this a grand ambition? Or is it of him? Is this the romanticism of him? Or is this a guy that wants to keep a promise to a dying friend?
Yeah, sure.
He promised his friend that he would continue his work. Could it be that simple for him?
And again, when you have really nothing to lose and everything to gain, what's to stop you?
Yeah. Well, what do you think is going to happen next?
So we're probably in Jody for a little bit. Probably not long, but for a little longer. We're establishing a relationship, you know, for George, who, they say it's not romantic, but clearly there's something there. Even if it's a sibling sort of relationship, somewhere, someone where outside of Al, George feels like, and Mimi, George feels like, okay, I can have an emotional connection with this person without feeling guilty because I am a different person.
Oh, I think they're going to fall in love.
Yeah. I mean, I do. You know, they're saying, they're fighting it for sure. So I think we're in Jody for a little bit, but then that's going to make things complicated because the whole, he's got to go shortly, couple few years, and take on this quest. So my question is, does he keep going back and forth? Does it restart again? You know, and after a while, I think that might start to affect George. I think he might start to get lost in the different realities that he's created, especially if he goes back and forth.
You mean back and forth from Jody to Dallas or back and forth from the past?
From the past to the present, from 2011 to 58.
So you think he will go back to 2011 before? I feel like we're in the past now.
I
have no idea, but he's traveled a really long way.
He has.
He has saved the Dunning family.
I mean, right? Then from now moving forward, it's all about finding Oswald at this point.
I feel like we're going to get... I don't know, because this is the first really big book we've read of King's that's first person.
Yeah.
Most of the big books are not, they're third person.
Yep.
So we can get a chapter from a different character's perspective and point of view. And from that, we get introduced to a large amount of characters. Well, this certainly hasn't had a small amount of characters in it.
It hasn't had a ton.
It's not like we get a, you know, whole chapter in it from Bev's abusive husband's perspective, wanting to beat his wife. Mm-hmm. And we get a whole chapter about what that guy's thinking about wanting to beat up Beverly. You know, it's not like we're going to have that, but I feel like we have to get a active antagonist. I don't know if it's just going to be the past. Like, he's going to have to undo the past. The forces of Ka mm-hmm. are going to really step up to be like, no, you can't prevent mm-hmm. this. I feel like there being the door underneath Fedek will matter. So
I think so.
I wonder if he's going to find that door.
Yeah.
I wonder if other characters are going to find that door.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's going to be more portals and pathways.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine so. Especially, but then again, what does JFK have to do with all this? You know? It's like, and does he actually stop that? You know, I don't know.
I think my idea of where this may end is he stops the assassination and he stays George and he goes back to Jody and lives the rest of his days out in Jody.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense.
I could totally
that would make
see
sense.
That happening.
Sure.
And we don't really know if it changed any other thing, if it created another reality or not. But
yeah, maybe just we know that that's a possibility, but that we have no idea whether or not that comes true.
Yeah, I think that's where I feel like it. He's so happy in Jody. And this is also, I might not be cynical enough because Stephen King might have Jody burnt to the earth and everyone in it dead by the end of it, you know? Like, it's possible.
I mean, that's true. I wouldn't put it past him.
There could be an army of vampires that just slaughters the entire town of Jody before this is over.
Oh.
All there to try to keep JFK from not getting assassinated.
Could be.
It's possible.
It's very possible.
I mean, he's got robot wolves with lightsabers, sneeches, and, you know, Dr. Doom and Wolves of the Cala. So, like, King's not above it getting really crazy and weird.
It's already gotten crazy and weird. Honestly, I mean, you know, there are certain things that happen here, too. You know, it's a violent book so far. You know, it's not... And the one thing about it is it classic King, it just starts. You know, and I feel like we're on a train that's not going to stop, you know?
Yeah. Stephen King is not always going to do straightforward plots with narratives. They're like labyrinths. They twist and turn. He puts you in the middle. And then, you know, like if you're writing the gunslinger's story conventionally, you're going to start with him going to Hambury. You're going to start with Wizard and Glass.
Right, right.
It starts that series of books starts 1,000 years after that event.
Yeah.
You know, so I agree. There's a lot of twists and turns. It just starts. So far, I have enjoyed reading this book as much as I have enjoyed any Stephen King book.
I completely agree.
It has been so much fun to read.
It's an excellent book. It's an excellent read.
It's like so many others where I feel like the words come out of the book and wrap themselves around my imagination, and I am in this world completely when I'm reading it.
You know, the other thing that I think is really impressive is that I believe, I don't know, you know what we didn't do?
What didn't we do?
We didn't talk about any of the background of the book.
No, we didn't. We were just so excited. Do you want to talk about
any of
that?
No, we won't do that. No, because the truth is I didn't do any of that work.
That's fair.
This time. We'll do it next time.
We'll do
it next time. But my point being is that it's interesting that Stephen King in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, when this was written, sounds exactly like the Stephen King from 1983 when it was written, who sounds a whole lot like the Stephen King in 1974 or whatever when The Shining was written. He is one of them. His voice is so consistent. You know, outside of some of the weird ones, you know, the Gunslinger and a couple other the weird ones that we've read, his voice is so consistent. And that's one of the things I think I enjoy about the book the most. I don't have to figure King out. I can just focus on the book. I can focus on the story. Because I know where he's coming from. I know how it's going to sound. I know how I'm going to read it. I know I'm going to read it fast because it's like eating. It's like eating a delicious meal.
Yeah.
You don't want it to end, you know? And even through some of the passages that were weird and difficult in the Dark Tower, it never felt like, oh, God, I have to read. Oh, I have to get through this chapter. Even some of my favorite books I've ever read, one or two times, I'm like, oh, man, you know? Now, it's probably not always going to be the case, but I just noticed that with him in this book that takes place in 2011, so probably when he wrote it, he just sounds so consistent, you know?
Really well said. I completely 100% agree. At this point, we have read enough and talked about enough King books to get an idea of how he sort of ticks in his books.
Yeah.
And even though this one is very different. It's about time travel. It's not a horror book. It's not necessarily a fantasy book. It's a little unique. It is still dripping King.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think it's very much like what the other Dark Tower books are. They are part fantasy. They are part adventure. They are part horror. There are moments in this book that are petrifying. Absolutely petrifying.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we ended on the Jim Law, Jim Law, Jim Law.
That's another example of King taking a thing that we have all probably done or participated in something like it, a high school pep rally, a high school football game, a major sporting event, a thing that is fundamentally not associated with creepiness, weirdness, or scariness.
You know, something.
We've all been to a place where there's a group of us and we're all in a good mood mm-hmm. and we're sitting in stands that are like bleachers, like a stadium, and we're all cheering, having fun, and all chanting a cheer, and everyone's having a good time. It's never creepy. It's never weird until King writes it. And then suddenly you're like, this is really, like, this is a bad omen.
And it's part of the brilliance. I think it's what brings, it what allows me to accept, okay, some of this is going to be weird and above my head and strange and creepy. And this one feels a lot like when we were reading It.
Yeah.
It does, for me at least.
It's a very similar experience to reading it. Very different book. The book that I think this is closest to in the King universe so far really is It. Because we spend a good part of what we have read so far has been in Derry right after Pennywise
yep.
retreats and...
Like weeks.
Yeah.
Weeks after.
Right after that. And so the effects of Pennywise's evil is still there in the town, and it's palpable. It's like a fog or a mist, if you would. Yeah, you see what I'm doing there? It's almost like a mist that you can walk through.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
All right, that was a total dad joke.
Yeah.
It might be time to wrap it up if I'm doing dad jokes.
No, it makes sense. I mean, I think we've wrapped this first quarter of the book up pretty neatly. I'm really interested to see where it's going to go, and I'm excited to pick it back up tomorrow morning and read it again.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick it back up tomorrow morning and read as well. Yeah. Great. Everyone, if you're not reading, pick it up, read along. We're only a few hundred pages in.
Yeah.
It's a big book. We are excited. As soon as we get to another good logical stopping point, mm-hmm. that's when we'll record. So if you want to find out where, find us on the social medias at Wheel of Ka, at Midnight Myth, at Derek Jones 198. Is that my Twitter? Derek C. Jones 198?
No, I think it's
just Derek Jones 198. That's my, Derek Jones 198 at Twitter. And follow along with us. We'll be sharing our thoughts and feelings and long days and pleasant nights.
Long days and pleasant nights.